He's an author and a physician, a family practice physician, and a lifestyle medicine physician. He's dedicated his life to helping people find the pathway to optimum health. He's Dr. Greg Steinke. I'm John Bradshaw, and this is our conversation. Dr. Greg Steinke, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
I really appreciate it. Been looking forward to talking with you. We're going to talk about medicine, health, lifestyle health. I know one of the things that you have a burden for is helping people find solutions to the problems they're facing. What we know is that bad habits result in bad outcomes, good habits, good outcomes. So along the way, we're going to talk about how people can develop good health habits. Before we do, let's talk about you. You're a physician. Where are you from? Where do you hail from?
I'm here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and originally from British Columbia, Canada.
Oh, where in BC?
Langley, BC is where I grew up.
Not far from Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a Canuck?
I'm a Canuck, although I'm actually a 50-50 kind of American-Canadian.
All right, I see. So. Sure. Do you get to Canada very often? Is that home?
It's home ultimately, but don't get up there as much as I'd like to. Yeah. You know, we need to get up there again to see my parents. Yeah. My kids really want to see my parents here.
Oh,
and we're going
to
plan a trip here soon.
Yeah, nice. So you identify as a Canadian, or if we were going around the room and saying where you're from, you would say what, US, or would you say Canada?
I would say I don't know where I'm from.
Okay.
I'm a dual citizen.
Yeah.
I grew up in both places.
Yeah. Which is not at all uncommon. You found your way to medical school. Were you always going to be a doctor from the time you were a kid?
No, not at all. I went through a dramatic conversion experience when I was in my mid-teens, and it dramatically changed my life focus from going after sports, baseball. You know, I was playing in high-level baseball at that point, and it transitioned into a desire to do something humanitarian for people.
So before that time, what, were you a kid who had dreams of playing in the MLB?
Yeah, I mean, I was scouted by the Seattle Mariners, and I was really a pretty, good lefty pitcher. And but, you know, I lost that interest over time. You know, when you sort of worship sports, there's an emptiness there.
But, man, it's worship, isn't it?
It sure is.
So you were the kid who, like me, sports filled your life. That was kind of what you lived and breathed.
You betcha. I was all about the sports at that age. And but you know, when you start to think about meaning,
yeah,
and purpose, you know, when you're doing well in baseball, they love you, and when you're not doing so well,
yeah,
they hate your guts.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, there's the interesting thing about sport, right? You can say it's inherently interesting if you're interested in that, and that's fine. You know, the drama and the this and the that and the art and the achievement and so forth. But unless you're from Pittsburgh, the Pirates playing the Diamondbacks on a Wednesday night in either Pittsburgh or Phoenix, meaningless, has no impact on life, will not enrich you. I'm not knocking someone who enjoys that. You might say, I enjoyed the game. But what do you get from that? You gave up 3 hours of your life.
Right.
For nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I really, compare it to just playing a board game with your family kind of thing. But in our society, we have elevated it to a very high place. I remember sitting in the dugout one time toward the end of my time. I was about 18 doing that. And just remembering my coach just going livid on the umpire. I mean, the umpire made some kind of call, and he was just, you know, using expletives and just really, you know, going at them. And I just remember thinking to myself, why am I doing this?
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
What's the purpose of this?
Yeah.
Like, where is meaning in life?
Mm.
And so I made that decision around that time. You know what? I'm going to do something different with my life. I want to do something humanitarian. I want to make a difference in somebody's life.
What do your friends say? The people who
you know,
knew
I lost
you
a lot
were.
Of friends.
Yeah?
I lost a lot of friends.
Did they think you were crazy?
I remember my own brother at the time looking at me and saying, Greg, you're so different. What happened to you?
Interesting.
You know?
So what about your parents? They had a kid who was doing really well, scouted by the Mariners. In their mind, you go to the big leagues. you got a great future, you're going to make this mountain of money, and you tell them, I'm not doing this anymore. What'd they make of that?
When I first told my mom that, she about raised the roof in terms of just being very upset. You know, we've put all this money into this, we've given you all this opportunity, and here you are just going to throw it all away, Greg.
Yeah, I can understand. Did that coincide? Tell me about the timing of that decision and your conversion experience that you mentioned.
My grandparents started to visit. Our core family were kind of the black sheep of the family. Our outer family had a lot of spiritual beliefs, a lot of strong Christian values. But our core family had sort of rebelled from all that. And so my grandparents visited for 3 straight summers and really ministered to me and my family, and it won me over. My grandfather was a godly man who had a lot of growth in his own life. And I just saw this level of love that he had and patience, and it inspired me greatly.
I would encourage people, grandparents, to never underestimate the power of a grandfather or a grandmother.
Amen.
Potent, right?
Absolutely potent.
Yeah.
I mean, just the level of love he demonstrated to our family when we were in a severe state of brokenness was awesome. And it inspired me. It helped me put a sense to my purpose. Yeah. And, I saw the success he had as a physician. He was very much involved with missions. And it helped me change my approach in life and see something greater that I could do with my life.
Were you the only one in your immediate family who embraced Christianity at that time?
At the moment,
at that time.
It led to my dad's conversion.
Oh, yeah?
And then that ultimately led to my mom's conversion.
Fantastic, huh?
Yeah.
But now, you'd walked away from a career in baseball, a potential career. Mm-hmm. My guess is you would have got a scholarship at college to play?
Yeah, that was what was on the docket, but I didn't press that. I didn't push for that.
Okay, but your parents are thinking, Greg's going to go to college and play baseball. Not only did you decide you weren't going to be a baseball player, you decided you were going to be a Christian. So that's a double whammy for them. You mentioned your mom clearly disappointed that you walked away from sport. What did they make of you embracing Christianity? Was that a shock to them?
I remember my grandparents gave me a Bible, and I was sitting on the edge of my bed, and I was just opening the Bible really for the first time on my own. And I was studying the table of contents and trying to understand what's the difference between Old and New Testament. It was just kind of this bizarre initial kind of investigation. And my mom walks by the room, sees me with the Bible open, scoffs at me, and says, Greg, I thought I'd have to deal with drugs or something, but not this religious fanaticism.
No way, really?
Oh, yeah. She had a lot of bitterness from getting kicked out of a Christian college when she was younger, and she had to work through that, and she's testified that publicly in the past.
Yeah. Hey, it is tough for kids, though, right? When they're in church and the church lowers the boom on them, they're in college, they do something stupid and the college kicks them out.
Yep.
There's less of that today. Most college kids can do as stupid as they want and to some degree get away with it to some degree. I don't want to exaggerate that.
Yeah.
So I'd hate to think the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction. But it's really hard when you're young and the school represents God in some way.
That's
a tough one. I've spoken to many people, even right here, who've been through that experience, and it sideways their life for a while.
Yeah, so after that, I started hiding my Bible.
Yeah, you did?
Oh, yeah. But, the Lord worked through my mom. You know, my mom's personality is sort of all or nothing. And so, she was all against Christianity until she wasn't.
Yeah.
And the Lord dramatically transformed that, and I
Fantastic.
Praise him for that.
So you entered into Christianity. You were the only one in your family.
Mm-hmm.
But then you mentioned your dad and then your mom. So what was that like? Surely that had something to do with your influence and your witness.
Absolutely. I mean, God was working on my dad's heart. My dad had been away from the Lord for a long time. He was raised in a Christian home. And he went through some pretty amazing, basically miraculous experiences that helped him see that God still wanted him, that God was interested in his life. He went through this very unusual experience in Southern California when we were living down there, where he was trying to find this place in East LA. It was guns and drugs and stuff. And he's driving down, and there's all these people clamoring around his car. And he calls out to God, and he says, "God, help me," because he felt like his life was at risk with these various situations. He's trying to use the streets to get to this place for a work that he was trying to do. And as he said those words, the light turned green, and he turned his head, he turned it back, and all of a sudden there's a police car right in front of him. And he just tailgates the police car and basically makes his way out of this bad part of town. And the various, you know, it was a really bad time for that part of L.A. And they just kind of left him alone all of a sudden. And as he got close to the place that he was supposed to, start his work, he turns his head, looks forward again, and the car disappears in front of his eyes. And so he realized at that moment that God helped him, that was likely an angel. And he had been away from God a long, long time. And so that was stewing in his heart. My mom was still openly antagonistic against Christianity, but he was having a longing. And so when I started to sort of, you know, verbally express my thoughts and feelings about wanting to go to church and so on, even though my mom was very against it, my dad, you know, took me aside at one point and said, "I'll take you to church."
Cool.
And so, you know, I wasn't driving yet, and so he started just dropping me off at church, pick me up afterwards, and that started a whole, you know, story that led to all of us coming to the Lord.
Oh man, that's fantastic. Now, you decided, rather than throwing a ball around, you'd wanted to do something humanitarian, but that's a long way from going to medical school. So how did you end up angling towards medicine?
So as we started going to church, you know, the church was having some health programs. And so we jumped into being volunteers with these health programs. They put us as sort of helpers in the program, table helpers. I'm in college. I don't know much about health, really. But I see these dramatic stories happening of people, you know, improving their cholesterol, improving their blood sugars, the weight loss. I remember one guy in particular just inspired me. He was a truck driver. Had kids in college, had bills to pay, mortgage, and went to the doctor to renew his truck driver's license. And the doctor's like, "If you don't get your health under control, it's over, man." And he was a single provider, had a whole family. So he got serious. He got his diabetes under control. He got his blood pressure under control. He lost weight. Went back to the doctor. And obviously got a bill of health. But while he was going through that process, he joined the health program and went through it to get motivation and so on. And we got to know him a little bit. And I remember at one of the follow-up sessions we had a few months later, you know, I didn't know him that well. I didn't really feel like I knew him as well as he made like he knew me when he came into that meeting. We hadn't even started yet, and he just walks up to me and gives me like this huge bear hug.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's tears coming down his face. And I'm like, "Hey, how's it going, man? How are you doing? Are you okay?" And he's like, "I just went to the doctor and he gave me a bill of health and he renewed my license. And I'm just so thankful that you guys were able to help us." And I just saw that twinkle in his eye, and I said, "You know what? I want to do this the rest of my life.
Fantastic.
This is what I want to do. I want to help people overcome those struggles, those issues with, you know, trying to turn around your habits, trying to get your habits in line with your physiology."
Yeah, yeah. Where'd you go to medical school?
Loma Linda University.
You enjoy it? You got to say yes, because now someone's going to tell
it was
the whole
awesome.
World Greg Steinke didn't like it. So
it was a
like
great
it.
Experience. Yeah. I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Residency, where was that?
I did at Loma Linda as well.
Oh,
and did a family and preventive medicine combo residency. A great bunch of folks.
Okay, look, family and preventive. So not everybody's doing preventive. In fact, then, very few. Today, few, but more, and it's increasing. I don't think I need to ask the question why you did preventive, because you just told me the story about the truck driver who had this massive turnaround and you wanted to be involved in that. But was it a little different at that? We're not talking 100 years ago, but those few years ago when you were in medical school, when and you said, I'm doing a preventive family combo residency. Did anybody look at you kind of like this and say, well, that's a little different? Because it was a little different.
Yeah, it was definitely, a direction, I think, that was sort of an early adopter kind of direction for medicine. But there was just a lot of research starting to come out. And, you know, I remember in medical school, one of the first days of medical school, they said, 50% of the information you're going to learn is wrong. We just don't know which 50% yet.
Well, that's interesting. And it's true. And I mean, I don't know how true, but there's got to be a lot of truth to that, right? Because tomorrow, yesterday's practice is discovered as being obsolete or outdated or just plain wrong.
And so they say that for each, kind of new fact that sort of comes out in the medical research, it takes 10, 15 years for it to sort of be adopted into medical practice, and you know, it takes even longer to get adopted into people's lives.
Yeah. But when it comes to preventive medicine, you're looking at lifestyle, you're looking at certain health factors. That's not the kind of medicine that's going to be, I've got to be careful as I say this, is not nearly as likely to be demonstrated to be out of date 5 years from now. We know lowering cholesterol has always been a good idea. Exercise, rest, so forth, always been a good idea. So you're dealing in a field where it's going to be a whole lot less change, maybe new light.
Yeah.
But it's not likely that 10 years from now you're going to look back and say, wow, were we wrong about blood pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I can still quote studies from the 1960s and they still be relevant today.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I remember that there's a sugar study by Dr. Register from the 1960s where he took some patients and gave them, you know, no sugar, 1 teaspoon all the way up to 14 teaspoons of sugar, and then drew their blood afterwards and looked at their white blood cells and dripped them on bacteria and and checked how aggressively were they killing the bacteria. And there was a dose-dependent response. As you raised up the amount of sugar that you took at any one setting for about 4 hours, there was a suppression in a dose-dependent way of that those white blood cells' ability to kill that bacteria. You know, the 14 teaspoons of sugar in one moment, you know, the white blood cells just sat there and looked at the bacteria, didn't do anything.
Yeah. Now, somebody who hears that, now you said that was done decades ago. If we repeated the study today, we'd find the same results.
It'd be exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
And people are experiencing that all the time. You know, part of the reason diabetes has so many infections related with it is that issue.
Yeah.
Is that very issue.
Yeah, that's interesting. Boy, just knowing that's got to make you stop and think, right? Except we mentioned earlier, and you've alluded to it along the way as well. The guy's 300 pounds overweight, not to knock him, but he made certain decisions that allowed him to get there. Unless, of course, it was some medical condition entirely independent of lifestyle. The person who has lung cancer and smoked or smokes made certain decisions that enabled them to get to that place of self-destruction. But one thing that I know you are big on is helping people to make the decisions that will enable them to avoid negative outcomes or address negative outcomes. So I'm going to be careful not to ask you a big question here because we're going to go to the break in just a moment. But let me ask you this question. So there's somebody who's I'm just going to use weight. They were 30 pounds overweight, went to the gym, changed their diet, lost the weight, gained the weight, lost the weight, gained the weight, lost the weight. They say, oh, I see that it's dependent on my choices, and I lost the 30 pounds, I can do this. Is there anyone who walks into your practice and you say to them, you can't do this, you cannot turn things around? I don't mean somebody who's super ill, but the typical person who has a lifestyle-related condition that's having adverse impact on their health, can that typical person find a way out of that? Or are some people just stuck?
I would say that everybody can. They're not necessarily going to avoid consequences all the time.
Sure.
But it has everything to do with the ability to make a choice.
Okay. So that's what I was looking for. Either everybody can or not everybody can. You said everybody can. So that sets us up for what's about to come next. How can a person with a negative health situation learn to develop habits that will set them on an altogether trajectory? We'll find out in a moment. He's Dr. Greg Steinke. I'm John Bradshaw. This is our conversation brought to you by It Is Written. You know that at It Is Written, we are serious about studying the Word of God, and we encourage you to be serious as well. Well, here's what you do if you want to dig deeper into God's Word. Go to itiswritten.study for the It Is Written Bible Study Guides online. 25 in-depth Bible studies that will take you through the major teachings of the Bible. You'll be blessed, and it's something you'll want to tell others about as well. Itiswritten.study. Go further. Itiswritten.study. Welcome back to Conversations brought to you by It Is Written. My guest is Dr. Greg Steinke, a physician, and a physician who focuses especially on lifestyle medicine. So, what's lifestyle medicine?
Lifestyle medicine is the treatment of disease with natural, everyday kinds of things like nutrition, exercise, sleep. Focusing on those particular details.
Oh, yeah, that sounds simple. But are we saving people through acai berries and copper bracelets and this kind of stuff, or that's not your thing?
We focus on the big things first, major in the majors. So, okay. What are you eating every day?
Okay.
You know, what are you doing day by day in terms of exercise versus sedentary activities, what are you involved with in terms of your sleep habits?
So real stuff, not quackery. You're not getting off into potions and lotions.
Yeah, I mean, we're focused on the lifestyle medicine first and foremost.
The question is, doesn't everybody know that, though, Dr. Steinke? Doesn't everybody know if I eat at McDonald's every day, I'm going to blow up and die young?
I mean, I think a lot of people know. A lot of times they don't have the depth of conviction they need. And they also lack the ability to accomplish it many times. So, for example, we know people need to eat their fruits and vegetables. The reports are that only about 10% of people eat enough fruits and vegetables.
Wow, 10%.
It's very low.
So the truck driver we spoke about earlier, he got real big. He might lose his license, sole provider for his family. His life would be seriously interrupted. Let me see if I can conjure up another example. A woman comes in, she can't walk up four stairs without having to stop and gasp for air, and she's aching all over, and she's overweight, and I'm sorry to keep picking on overweight, but I just am. Easy for the example. Don't they say, wait, I did this, I can undo this? My question is, so you see people all the time in that kind of scenario. How many people are surprised that they did this to themselves? Keeping in mind, not everybody does. Some people get sick and it's out of their control. But we're talking about lifestyle illnesses. How many people do you say, whatever you say, and they say, really? My diet? Really? Exercise? Are there many people now who are surprised to learn that they contributed to their own demise?
I think there's a couple pieces to that. There's the fact that people have some general knowledge about things, but okay. When they apply it to their own specific experience, sometimes there's a lack of insight that this thing that I'm engaging in every day, like for example, people think that, I just drink a little bit of caffeine. Well, even one cup a day delays your sleep onset at night, on average. So there's these subtle, more subtle things that I think are increasingly affecting people.
Okay.
So but there's also a point of no return.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can push it so far, and you think, well, I can turn this around anytime. I'll just do it tomorrow. I'll do it next week. There's a point at which the injury to your body is not going to come back to how it was before.
So what I'm hearing you saying is not too many people are surprised that eating double cheese and bacon burgers is a negative. But some people might be really surprised about other things, like a little caffeine isn't actually good. Some might be surprised that a little alcohol isn't actually good. Some might be surprised that if I sleep more, it will really materially benefit my life. So there are still some surprises, you'd say?
Yeah, I remember this lady in the ER. She had come in the ER with headaches. Her blood pressure was like 220 over 120, so very high.
Yeah.
And start interviewing her, and her family are bringing sodas and putting them in places all around. And I'm like, oh, you like soda? She's like, oh, I love Coca-Cola. I just love it. And, you know, I drink it all day long. And I'm like, did you know that soda is a, you know, high soda intake is associated with high blood pressure? She's like, what? No way.
Really?
I can't believe that. No way. Is that true? And I'm like, yes, sorry to tell you that. I crushed her. I didn't mean to crush her, but, you know, just the, you know, that's one of the facts.
But she didn't know.
She had no idea.
I got a friend, big, tall guy. He's a big, tall, big, big guy. I saw him one day. I said, what in the world happened to you? He said, I lost 70 pounds. How did you lose 70 pounds? He said, one change. I stopped drinking soda. Okay, two changes. And I started walking more.
Good for him.
Walking more.
Good for him.
That one thing. Now, this is a guy with bright mind, understands nutrition to a large degree, just kind of snuck up on him, and he didn't realize that making that one change, and I would think that no matter how much you love soda, quitting soda and substituting that for something non-harmful for the sake of your health could hardly constitute a sacrifice, right? No one can be upset about doing that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think.
Yeah, I remember a lady coming in who said she had gained 40 pounds and she hadn't changed a thing, she said. She wasn't eating very much. She was still active and so on. And so, you know, we started investigating. I, you know, checked her out, asked as many questions as I could. It wasn't really figuring it out, and did some labs, and those all seemed fine. And then on her second visit, kept inquiring about her lifestyle and her diet. And then she's like, oh, I didn't realize that something I'd done recently. I used to drink a lot of water, and I just kind of, because I like the flavor, I started drinking this squirt beverage. And I was like, well, how much are you drinking every day? And she's like, I don't know, maybe about, you know, 2 half gallons a day or something.
Oh.
You know, these large bottles.
Yeah.
2 of those a day.
How much sugar is she getting?
And a lot. And I'm like, there you go, that's the cause.
Yeah.
Because we mapped it out as she started that before she started gaining the weight. And I'm like, stop that and you should be fine.
Okay, so it's pretty easy for you, pretty easy for me, not as easy as for you, to look at somebody and say, if you sleep more, exercise, eat more vegetables, and eat less garbage, you're going to do a whole lot better. Because that's true. It's just true. And we could get more specific than that. And if you tell that to a patient, my guess, Dr. Steinke, is that 19 out of 20 patients are going to say, yeah, doc, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah, you're right. I know. So, you know. Now your patient knows. Patient X, if you will just do this, you're going to be fine. Or much finer. Okay. So now everybody knows. But not everybody changes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, we'll come back to some of the specifics a little bit later. But let's talk about this, and I know it's an emphasis of yours. How in the world can you change? Because for me, you know, not drinking alcohol, you lock me up in a liquor store. I'm not going to touch it. This stuff doesn't matter. Cigarettes, don't care. Hamburgers, I'm not going to eat a hamburger before the day I die. Just not a meat hamburger. Not going to do it. I'm going to eat fruits and vegetables. I ate lots of beans. We had Eric Nelson here. I was already eating beans, but now, man, I'm eating more beans. But not everybody can make those decisions. And I'm certain that there are some decisions in my life, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I've got to develop a whole new pattern or bunch of habits here. How in the world can people find the wherewithal to do what they know to do? Like Paul, right? Romans 7. I don't do what I know I should, and I do the things I know I shouldn't. How then can we start going about implementing solutions in our lives successfully? How do we learn the habits that get us on a pathway to success?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, acknowledging and being truthful about our powerlessness. You know, there's a humility factor there where you know, keep running into the wall, running into the wall, running into the wall, and admitting the truth of that. It's true. I am unable to change my diet. I love that thing. I love, you know, the hamburger. I love the the soda or whatever. I love it. And being really honest about that and admitting your powerlessness and saying to yourself, you know what? I need help. I'm in a tough place here. Mm. And then starting to look outside yourself. And as a Christian, we have incredible insights into this process of starting to realize that you can't trust yourself. We have inherited and cultivated tendencies to just go the wrong direction. And so that we have to learn not to trust ourselves anymore and to trust the principle. Okay, the principle is, if I leave off the hamburger, I'm going to be healthy. So I'm going to base my thoughts on that, but I need help. I need to look to the Redeemer. I need to look to the one who was able to, you know, do miraculous healings when he came down, and ask him for help to help me with this one thing. It's a miracle when you change your lifestyle. Yes. It's a miracle when you change a habit, when you even the desire to say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to start trying to do this. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to rule my being. I'm going to do like what David said to Solomon, be strong, make yourself a man, you know, like he said, 1 Kings 2:2, show yourself a man. And so taking control of your being and giving yourself to the Lord and saying, God, you've got to help me with this because I just keep going that way, mm-hmm. going that way. The habits are so strong. And as you begin to make an effort, sometimes you got to have people helping you. Some people are so down in the dumps and so deep into the depths of their habit that they can't do it on their own. They have to get help. And so certain addictions, you know, the person is powerless, completely powerless to say no to that alcohol or heroin or whatever, that, you know, even cigarettes, you've got to get help sometimes. But even if you need help or not, making that conviction stronger, saying to God, deepen my desire for this, make the desire come. And give me that deep conviction so that I begin to start trying and making an effort. And every time you make a little bit of effort, your frontal lobe of your brain starts to be exercised. And as that exercise happens, like a muscle, it gets a little easier and a little easier. The average smoker takes about, 4 to 10 times to quit smoking. So why do you have to repeat until they finally get it? Well, there's an education process on, you know, kind of this battle within, and there's also a practice process to get your own being and rule your being, so to speak, to get yourself going in that new direction.
Yeah, and I want to drill down on that a little bit, because if you like jam donuts, or if it's chocolate cake, or you go to the supermarket and they're pastries and they're not that expensive and you buy 4 of them, and it's not easy to quit. You've acknowledged that. You talked about the smoker. It's got to be a repeated try sometimes. Lots of people have tried and failed. Mm-hmm. They've tried and prayed mm-hmm. and failed. So this question, I may be asking you to repeat something that you've said. What do you say to the person who says, yeah, but I tried and I wasn't successful. I tried to get soda out of my house. I'm just addicted to it.
You know, coming to a conviction on what is the right thing. You know, what's the right thing for my life? You know, sometimes you have to start experiencing consequences, right? If you stay up too late, and then you're really tired the next day, and then you say to yourself, ah, man, why did I do that again? Why did I stay up, you know, watching YouTube or Facebook again? You know, whatever. You know, you realize the facts of the situation. You acknowledge the facts. I'm going to, acknowledge the truth that this is a problem in my life. And then what you do is you say, God, I love this. And I want this to change. I don't know how to change it. I need your help. I give my will to you. And as that temptation comes on, it's 8:30 at night, the kids have gone to bed or whatever, and now the temptation's coming on. I want to open my computer and I want to look at my phone, and I want to look at that thing. Help me to deepen my conviction at that moment. Help me to pray at that moment and ask God to start that process. And you may fail again and again and again, but as you begin to deepen your effort with that and start to make an effort. And you can do little things. You can take your computer and put it in the back of your pickup or whatever, the back of your car or something like that, in the back seat. You can do things when you're not in the temptation to make it harder to do that. My wife chatted to me about this issue. She sometimes will wake up in the middle of the night, you know, tending the children or whatever, and if she lets her mind sort of start thinking about her various tasks and stuff in the middle of the night, she can't get back to sleep. And so what she literally does is she just repeats the word bed to herself. Bed, 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 bed. And she gets herself back to bed and she goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And so there are little tricks you start to do, and you start to realize that you are just bent a certain way.
Yes.
And you just have to acknowledge that. And when you acknowledge that bent, you know, it can take a huge effort. I mean, Paul talks about this, right? In 1 Corinthians 9:27, where that word there, you know, some of the translations translate it, I discipline myself.
Yes.
Some of the translations,
keep under my body.
I whip myself kind of thing. I beat myself with blows. You know, sometimes you got to really just take yourself and force yourself in. And God, through the power of the Spirit, helps you
yes.
with that.
You know, there are several things you've picked up on here that are key, and one or two of them is very infrequently discussed. Number one, took you a while to get into the hole you're in. Number two, it may take a while to get out.
Yeah.
Number three, you may fail repeatedly, and that's okay.
Yeah,
don't get discouraged. And this one, I really like the emphasis because it's you don't hear it very often. Praying that God would deepen your conviction.
Yeah.
You know, I probably shouldn't be eating chocolate cake all night after 10 o'clock, but man, I love it. I tried. I can't beat it. How about praying, God, deepen my conviction against this. Give me a loathing or a determination.
Amen.
Asking
Amen.
God at every step to do for you what you can't do for yourself is essentially righteousness by faith.
I mean, I've gone through this, just a little confession here. I've gone through this experience. I went through a painful process personally, where a fellow, very close friend, physician, was found unfaithful, and it created great pain in me. And so I was dealing with this pain for a long time. It was very difficult, and I fell into watching NHL hockey into the late wee hours of the night, just kind of trying to escape, this escape process. And I went through that same experience where I was like, Lord, deepen my conviction. Bring me conviction. Help me to really care about getting my sleep, you know, and making a difference in my patients' lives and my family's lives. Help me to really get out of this. Give me new therapy for this, a healthy therapy, exercise, and help me to find ways to talk about this and you know, journaling. I did a lot of journaling, trying to detail out how does this all work inside me. You know, and Lord deepened that conviction and gave me victory. And I've had victory over that for several years now. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of stuff that, you know, there's a lot of things that Satan is trying to put on us right now.
Yeah.
Trying to grab us on these kinds of issues.
I wonder if many people don't even realize how difficult the situation is. So when I'm saying to you, alcohol, it's never going to interest me. I don't know what would happen for that. Tobacco and a bunch of stuff will never interest me. So it's easy for me to say that doesn't interest me. Shouldn't interest you.
Mm.
It's not a hang up for me, so it's not a hang up. It shouldn't be a hang up for you. But man, for one thing, everybody's got their own hang ups. And for two, the hang up that you're in, whether it's something seemingly innocuous like jelly beans, and you're getting sugar all day long and it's bad for you, or too much pizza late at night, too frequently, whatever the thing is, some of those can be really deep seated. And take a lot of working out for whatever reason. You just like the dopamine hit that you get every time you scroll to another video.
Yeah.
And there's a chemical dependency that happens. So recognizing that your issue with soda or burgers or whatever it is can be actually a major thing, difficult to unravel. Mm-hmm. You really got to have God's help, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you brought to mind the connection of PTSD and post-traumatic stress disorder and irritable bowel syndrome.
There's a
connection. Very, very strong connection there.
Okay.
And a lot of times these PTSD episodes happen when you're a child or perhaps they happened, you know, as a teen or even sometimes later in life. And that can bring on the situation where you're having a lot of distress. And that's a vulnerable situation because you can start to try to cope with it in unhealthy ways. And it can lead you into bad habits where you're trying, you know, alcohol is a good example of that.
Yeah.
You feel pain, you take alcohol, it numbs the pain, in the gut, and then you get into an alcohol issue that's one layer, but you have this whole other layer underneath with the PTSD issue that you've got to address as well. And if you don't address both things, you're going to be stuck in that for a long time, just wrapped up in it.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that in a moment. How do you identify what might be the underlying causes? With Dr. Greg Steinke, I'm John Bradshaw. More in a moment from our conversation, brought to you by It Is Written.
More and more people are watching It Is Written TV. They're watching their favorite It Is Written programs, listening to inspiring sermon series, and much more. They're watching them here, here, and even here. See for yourself why people are turning to It Is Written TV to watch their favorite Christian programs live and on demand. Watch It Is Written TV for free anytime on Roku, Apple TV, and at itiswritten.tv.
Every Word is a one-minute Bible-based daily devotional presented by Pastor John Bradshaw and designed especially for busy people like you. Look for Every Word on selected networks or watch it online every day on our website, itiswritten.com.
Welcome back to Conversations brought to you by It Is Written. My guest is Dr. Greg Steinke, a physician. Boy, Greg, a moment ago you touched on some really important things. You made the point that sometimes the issue is expressed because of an underlying cause. Somebody's drinking to numb the pain might be pain from something from long ago. So, if I want to stop behavior X, it may be that I need to address the underlying cause. How do I identify what that might be?
I think that's where prayer is so important. Also having counseling or conversations with insightful people can help you see the connection. Even just hearing about certain kinds of connections, like for example, in the first year of life, you have to have a really good bond with the mother, right? Without that good bond, you are vulnerable in terms of trust issues.
Mm.
And so if you don't realize that, say for example, you're living your life and that bond actually didn't occur that well, and maybe you can think back to some situations in your childhood that you might start to question it. As you educate yourself about that relationship and you say, oh, there's some very important details there. How does that relate to me? How does that relate to my situation now? And you start to get some insights into that. It educates you and you begin to approach and reframe your current struggles in a new way. And that's where the insights begin to happen.
It's interesting. You're a physician. You're talking to people about their blood pressure and their cholesterol, their weight, and their numerous things. I'm only ever picking on the stereotypes, almost. But what you're talking about, this approach to learning new habits to get new outcomes, that can apply to about anything. Pornography. Mm-hmm. It could apply to negative behavior in a marriage where you identify those traits that you should not express. Essentially, it's an approach for dealing with sin of all kind. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. And the amazing thing that you see in healthcare is that each of those issues have health consequences many times.
Mm.
I mean, you wouldn't believe how often it happens when marriages are starting to break apart that one of those people is in the doctor's office all of a sudden.
Mm.
When their anxiety's acting up or their blood pressure's acting up or they're starting to have kidney failure from, you know, high blood pressure. And as you tease through it, you realize this is all about the marriage. This isn't ultimately about their kidneys. I mean, obviously the kidneys are struggling and suffering right now, and we need to address that and help them get their blood pressure down. But we have got to tend to this issue, you know, or else, you know, that stress is just going to keep eating away at that person.
So that's a whole health thing. It seems to me that this preventive medicine is really a matter of getting people in tune with God's healthcare plan. Is it fair to say?
Absolutely. You know, the Lord knows better than anyone how our physiology does work and how it's supposed to work. Yeah. And it doesn't work right for our lives. I mean, we have natural issues. I mean, the blood pressure issue. When you're in utero, when you're in the womb, if your mother has tons of stress in utero, your kidneys won't develop right, for example.
Oh, well.
And then your risk of blood pressure is much higher when you're older. So there's all sorts of nuance to our lives. There's so much complexity. And so, you know, as you make efforts to improve your lifestyle, improve your habits, you know, the way your physiology responds to it many times is favorable and helpful, but sometimes it's not as much as you'd like. Sometimes you'd like to see your blood pressure totally normalized and it only comes down by half. Well, you still made great progress,
yeah.
And you have to be comfortable with the idea that, you know, on this side of heaven, you know, we're never going to get everything perfect.
Hey, so let me ask you about that. We've talked about a natural approach. You're talking people through, you're changing habits, you're changing lifestyle, or at least you're counseling for that. Where does medication come into your practice? Are you against medication?
I'm not against medication. I think that, we have a pyramid that we use to help people understand this. So you start at the bottom of the pyramid and you're walking up the pyramid. And the bottom is lifestyle. So the question I ask is, for this particular issue, would lifestyle help this?
Okay.
In most cases. So if you look at acid reflux, you ask the question, would lifestyle help this? Absolutely. You know, reduce the fatty foods, you know, eat less in the evening, lose weight, increase fiber, et cetera, et cetera. But for some people, we get those things all as good as they can. They're doing really well on those issues, but they still have acid reflux. Okay, now what? Well, we'll step up to the next kind of thing. We elevate the head of the bed. You know, do these kinds of other lifestyle things. Maybe there's some supplements that can be helpful. We have several, but you know, the next step up is medications. Medications are necessary sometimes. Because what happens if you just leave acid reflux to run amok for decades? Well, you get cancer of the esophagus eventually. That's where it couldn't head to. And there's even a higher level, you know, at the very top where you're dealing with medications and surgeries and hospitalizations, where, there's a procedure called the Nissen funduplication, where some people literally have to have the bottom of their esophagus tightened in order to, deal with that acid reflux because of congenital changes that have occurred. You know, so of no fault of that person, right? So everyone may be pointing the finger, you're eating too much fat, you're eating too much meat, you're doing the wrong things, you're smoking, whatever. You know, even that person's not doing any of that, there may be problems in their physiology that and their anatomy that they just can't fix without some higher level effort. And so, you know, you just be pragmatic and practical. You know, why is lifestyle so helpful? Because it has low risk. It's something you have control over. There's not a lot of risk of side effects and adverse reactions by, you know, eating less, fatty food.
So in one small corner of Chattanooga, this is the emphasis, and I'm certain in other corners as well, but at your place it is. What you've just said without saying it is we could essentially solve the healthcare crisis in this country if we adopted this approach to medicine. And I know what I just said, and I'll stand behind it. And I did use the word essentially. We could essentially solve the healthcare crisis. I didn't say cure every sick person, but imagine if high blood pressure just became a thing and not this avalanche that it is, and the same with hardening of the arteries, and the same with any number of things as people adopted. So tell me then, why has the Department of Health and Human Services, and they know. Why haven't they jumped all over this and started beating on this drum from Washington, D.C. to the smallest village in Alaska? Why is this not strongly emphasized when this is? We're not going to medicate our way out of the healthcare crisis. We are medicating our way deeper into a healthcare crisis. Why in the world, Dr. Steinke, is this gospel not being proclaimed in doctors' offices all across the fruited plain?
Well, there are voices crying, and even in government. But there's a lot of other forces that are trying to muddy up the waters, right? There's a lot of money being made on things that ultimately lead to illness. I mean, we've talked about them already, right? From the soda industry to the food manufacturing industry. I mean, by and large, most people go after what tastes good, what feels good, and so on. And a lot of those things end up in health consequences. Yeah. And so there's powerful, lobbies and so on that are, making that a much more, a less of a force. But having said that, there are still more and more people moving this direction. People are seeing the cause and effect. They're seeing the relationships. Yeah. I think 20 years ago there was much more of a feeling that diet didn't make a difference. It didn't really matter what you ate. You're gonna pretty much end up the same. Those sentiments have really been reduced now. There's many more people who agree that the research is getting clearer and clearer that lifestyle makes a difference, diet makes a difference, and so that's I think really good for our society to have a clearer message, but also is going to be an issue when it comes to the battles between going after what you like and your preferences and sort of the bad habits versus pulling yourself out of that and starting to choose the better way.
Along with our friend Dr. David DeRose and Trudy Lee, you authored this book, 30 Days to Natural Blood Pressure Control. And it's a great book. We sell it here at It Is Written. Oh, by the way, itiswritten.shop. When our shop is open, it's open 6 days a week, itiswritten.shop. You'll find this gem. Why did you decide to write this book? I mean, it's a combined effort, but why did you, as one of the three authors, decide to write this?
Because high blood pressure is a devastating issue in America. It's insidious, so people don't often realize they have it. In fact, even today, there's a large subsection of the world who have high blood pressure and don't know it.
Yeah, and typically, and I've got to be careful here, not for everybody, but many, 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 many cases, people don't need to have high blood pressure. They could lifestyle their way out of it. Can't say that for everybody, because that wouldn't be true. But lots of it could be avoided, right?
Yeah, and so if people start to realize these cause and effect relationships, when it comes to, we mentioned diet, sleep. You don't get enough sleep, your blood pressure's higher. I mean, that's well documented.
Okay. You mentioned diet. I want to ask you five things, just five quick hits.
Yeah.
Five things that impact blood pressure negatively, and then I'll ask you five positively. Five things. Should be pretty easy. We've probably mentioned them all.
Yeah.
What are they?
Alcohol, caffeine, overweight, anger, anxiety, stress kinds of stuff.
Anger, interesting. Well, yeah, I suppose. Five things that impact blood pressure positively. Five simple steps you can take.
Eat your beans.
Yeah.
Fruits and vegetables. Yeah. Lose weight. Get enough exercise. Isometric exercise. Here's a little fact. Isometric exercise, that's where you are pushing against a force and not moving your muscles.
Yeah.
Studies show that if you do 2 minutes of isometric exercise 3 times a week, you'll lower your blood pressure. Some of the strongest lowering in terms of exercise studies is in that area by 10, 12 points.
I should be fine all the time I spend banging my head against a brick wall.
That's
isometric exercise.
And like, for example, the hand grip machine, instead of going like this, just hold it tight.
Just holding it.
Or even when you're driving down the road, just push against the steering wheel.
Really?
For 2 minutes, make some of the muscles there fatigue over 2 minutes, and the nitric oxide will start to flow out of those muscles and dilate your blood vessels.
Fantastic. Okay, we're not out of time, but we're getting close. You've talked a lot about a strong emphasis, and one of your favored emphases, clearly, helping people develop habits to help, not just telling them what to do, not just giving them the information, but then helping people develop the good habits that will lead them out of negative consequences and towards good consequences. And I think that's a key. It's one thing just to say. It's a one thing, you know, we're not going to make America healthy by giving every last person a leaflet outlining good health principles. There's got to be more than that, and you're emphasizing that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and one thing I want to say to those who are Christians, who have a strong desire to help people, I just want to urge you, go and make a difference in somebody's life when it comes to helping them with their health. Walk beside them.
Oh, yeah.
Realize that people often don't necessarily tell you immediately those deep struggles. But as you get to know them and you realize that they're struggling with different things, show them the Savior. Help them to realize that, you know, if they push hard on it and keep making efforts, even if they're failing right now, that they can have victory sooner or later, and come beside them, keep encouraging them. And that's our work as Christians. It's not just preaching. Preaching the gospel is huge, but it's also healing. And healing in this day many times has to do with going beside people and helping them through these habitual struggles and bringing them into a saving relationship with God through the change in habit.
You mentioned that 20 years ago, lifestyle factors were not accepted as they are today in terms of their impact on health outcomes. What do you think will be 20 years from now? And what would you like to see?
That's a good question. I would like it to be a situation where, you know, these details are so well mapped out. Like right now, the gut microbiome is being extremely detailed out. And so that is within, you know, 10 years, everyone's going to have a detailed knowledge about that, hopefully, whoever wants to. And we will begin to, some of these diseases that don't make as much sense right now, we are going to, I think, have a clear understanding of the cause and effect relationships. Here's one example. Autoimmune disease. We know that now that autoimmune disease, 80% of autoimmune disease starts with uncommon stress.
Oh, well.
80%. And so there's some kind of uncommon stress in many cases that lead into an autoimmune disease situation. And many times there's connections all the way along where someone's struggling with Crohn's, someone's struggling with thyroid issues or different kinds of autoimmune disease. You have to address the stress. And we do not address the stress. If you look at the protocols that physicians have for these different diseases, there is nothing there on address stress, help them get their stress levels down, help them deal with the psychological factors better. Nothing.
So,
but it's there. It's in the medical literature.
It's in the literature. We hope and pray it'll take hold, and maybe 20 years from now, we'll be living in a more enlightened time with healthier people and better outcomes. Dr. Steinke, thanks. This has been great. I really appreciate you taking your time. God bless you. Much continued success to you.
Thank you.
Thanks. And thank you for joining us. He's Dr. Greg Steinke. I'm John Bradshaw, and this has been our conversation.